Hello and welcome to an African Climate Change Conversation podcast. My name is Andrew Murray-Watson and I'm part of the communications team at British International Investment, the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. Today I have the great pleasure of speaking to His Excellency Wamkele Mene, Secretary General of the African Continental Free Trade Area. As many listeners will know, the African Continental Free Trade Area was established in 2018 and has 43 parties, making it the largest free trade area in the world by number of member states after the World Trade Organization. In the run-up to COP27 in Egypt next month, I started by asking His Excellency about the twin challenges of food security and climate change.
I think the underlying point of your question is absolutely correct, and that is that even if you were to solve the food insecurity crisis on the African continent or anywhere else in the world, there would still be other challenges. Today, the African continent of 1.3 billion people relies significantly on importation of grains from Russia and Ukraine. By some estimates, some countries are over 70% reliant on the importation of these grains from Russia and Ukraine combined. Of course, we all see the impact of that, the global distortion in markets of grains, which has caused severe inflationary pressures on food security and basic foodstuffs on the African continent. And so that's a very, very serious problem that we have. So we've got to look at how do we reduce reliance on global supply chains for basic food products, but more importantly, how do we ensure food self-sufficiency and agricultural products in Africa? I think that's the easier part of the equation, at least in my view. The more difficult part is the point that was underlying in your question, and that is that it may very well be that you are able to solve that issue in 4 to 5 years' time. But if climate change remains a very, very significant factor and may very well undermine all of the efforts that the African continent undertakes to ensure agricultural and food self-sufficiency, if climate change affects the ability of farmers to harvest, put their harvest to the market, then obviously the entire effort falls apart. And that is the effort of establishing continental self-sufficiency. So it is a very, very important consideration, particularly if we want to uplift millions and millions of farmers out of the condition of being subsistence farmers that they are in now and bring them into regional value chains to ensure food sustainability in Africa, we have to pay attention to climate change. We have already seen the impact in the Sahel region, for example. We have already seen the impact in Mozambique, in the floods in South Africa last year. So all of these things have an adverse impact, a materially adverse impact on farming communities, and it is all as a result of climate change. And so what we expect to see out of COP 17 was a long time ago. What we expect to see out of COP 27 are commitments that beyond the pledges, but real commitments and the financing for climate resiliency, to build climate resiliency, and to make sure that as we transition, the adaptation happens commensurate with countries' abilities, those who have the capability to provide the financing that is needed, I think should step up. I think what happened in Holland a few weeks ago was really unfortunate, where there was a very strong effort to ensure that there is mobilization of resources for climate change, to fight climate change, and of course for adaptation. And so I am hopeful that we will see these commitments being made and increased in November in Sharm el-Sheikh. I don't know if my hope will become a reality, COP27, but I certainly hope that we do see more commitments being made and being followed through in the months and years to come.
Are we looking at potential solutions that by definition have to be adopted on a regional basis and almost a pan-continental basis rather than a country-by-country basis? Is that something that you're seeing on the ground?
Well, What I'm seeing on the ground is that what may work for the continent of Africa is a continental approach. You may be aware that just last month, there was Africa Climate Week, which was convened by the UN in Gabon at the end of August. And the idea there was to do exactly that, to take a continental approach to this challenge. Individual countries do not have the financial capacity to address these challenges on either an individual or indeed a regional basis. I think a continental approach, as the UN has already started to provide guidance on that, a continental approach is important so that all countries that need the support, all countries that need access to finance adaptation, that they have the necessary finance to do so.
What does that mean politically for Africa in terms of sort of, I guess, in terms of countries' relations with each other? I mean, are we by necessity now seeing more political cohesion and a sort of shared purpose?
If you look at the challenges that are caused by climate change, and again, I can only speak with what I'm familiar with on the African continent, the challenges are transnational. The effect of climate change in the Sahel region, for example, doesn't affect only Mali or only Niger. The impact of climate change affects an entire region, in some cases an entire continent. When you look at the very negative spillover effects of climate change, where people who are ordinarily farmers are now pushed into extremism, into terrorism, because their livelihoods have been very negatively affected by climate change. And that impact of disruption takes a regional dimension, where an entire region, the agricultural sector, the farming community for the entire region is disrupted, which then has an impact on peace, security, and stability of the region. And so these are the other dimensions of climate change that are not perhaps not immediately obvious to us, but when you analyze deeper, you see the impact that climate change, the disruptive impact that it may potentially have on a farmer, on an individual farming community, which then pushes that community into terrorism, at least in example of the Sahel, or into other undesirable areas of economic activity. And so that's why the solution has got to be continental, because the problems that climate change causes have an impact on an entire continent.
A lot is going to be made about the white elephant in the middle of the room, but COP is going to be around gas and the use of gas. Is the focus on energy transition perhaps overshadowing the very acute and growing requirement to support agriculture and food and support food security?
Absolutely. I think that if you look at the debate on transition, energy transition, big questions have to be answered. How do we then make sure that less industrialized countries have the opportunity to fire up their economic growth through industrialization, particularly in the absence of appropriate support for adaptation? And so I think before we get to answer the question of whether or not renewable energy or whether or not energy transition is desirable, the fundamental question that has got to be answered is, can it be financed? If we don't have the financial commitments, it seems to me to be unfair to expect countries that are at the lower end of development to forego their industrialization, to forego their economic growth, the potential for economic growth, by focusing on transition rather than focusing on industrialization. But I think it is possible to do both. I think it's possible to power ahead on industrialization based on renewable energy, but the financing has to be there. And so we have to be fair to countries that are at the lower end of development and not require them to accelerate energy transition when the resources to do so and when the resources for industrialization, for financing industrialization, or at least renewable energy industrialization, when those finances are not there.
Just talking about financing specifically, I was an argument was put forward to me the other day that obviously the commitments from the Global North are incredibly important, but actually also African institutional investors and African sovereign wealth funds have a role to play as well. I mean, do you share that view?
I do share that view. I think that it's everybody's responsibility. Everybody has a responsibility and everybody has a contribution to make. But, you know, let's be clear. A continent that contributes a negligible amount of global emissions cannot possibly be expected to fully finance, including African private sector, to fully finance or take on the burden of energy transition and the cost associated with it. So I think we have to be mindful of the contributions that all of us make, and we have to understand that the financial commitments must be commensurate with the contribution that we make to global emissions. And science is very clear on who has done what over the last 4 or 5 decades. It's not my view. It's what science tells us. Different regions of the world who have contributed to the effects of to what we see as climate change. And so I think as much as the principle is important, and the principle is that we must all contribute, but we have to be fair because others have a greater contribution that we have made to the condition that we are in today.
Just changing tack slightly, you mentioned global value chains and Africa's place within global supply chains, and more often than not the case that Africa sits at the very, very bottom of value chains simply because the African nations tend to export raw materials and don't really benefit from the utilization of those materials into finished products.
Yes.
In terms of agriculture and talking in the context of building climate resistant agricultural systems, what do you think needs to change to move African economies up that
range? I think that the good thing is that there's a greater realization and acceptance of the fact that we should no longer and we must no longer be exporting unprocessed primary commodities, which is something that has over the last 60, 70 years that has kept our continent to a great extent in this position of underdevelopment. If you look at the fact that, for example, in 2019, the African continent imported up to $16 billion worth of pharmaceutical products. And when you look at the natural resource endowment and the natural resources that are required to make a large number of pharmaceutical products, including medicines and so on, a lot of those come from the African continent. Similarly, if we look at the global coffee or tea industry, Africa in 2015 exported $6 billion worth of unprocessed raw coffee products, tea products, that contributed to a global $100 billion global industry. When you take into account the packaging that's done, the rebranding, the processing that is done outside of the African continent. So we do accept and realize that we must accelerate the value addition in Africa, and we must accelerate the establishment of regional value chains so that we power through industrialization that is going to enable the African continent to be self-sufficient without disconnecting from the global economy, because no region or country can completely disconnect from the global economy. And in any case, even if you were able to do that as a region or as a country, it is entirely undesirable. However, there is a case to be made for a higher degree of industrial self-sufficiency that the African continent can achieve. The question that you are raising is, how do we make use of opportunity in this path of industrialization, in this path of establishing regional value chains? How do we create opportunities for green energy, for green trade, which is, of course, our area of interest is trade. How do we make sure that we create opportunities for green trade, for productive sectors that support renewable energy, investment in those productive sectors that support renewable energy? We have already started seeing some of this, by the way. We have already seen in Southern Africa, some parts of Southern Africa, engaging in the export of energy, of wind energy. The big question, again, is where is the financing and the investment to enable a green industrialization to happen? If we can't answer that question of how are we going to finance green industrialization, then I'm afraid it is, again, to reiterate the point, it would be unfair to say to a region that contributes the least to global emissions must now put up a lion's share of the transition that is going to be costly. So there is absolutely a need for us to consider, as we establish these value chains, as we establish this industrial capacity, how do we do so in a way that is good for the environment, good for the climate, good for industrialization in Africa? Without financing, I don't think we'll be able to do it.
And just lastly, what are your kind of hopes and fears for COP in Egypt? I mean, what do you think is, I guess, firstly, a realistic outcome? And what do you think is the best possible outcome?
Well, to be very frank with you, I do not know what is going to be a realistic outcome. What I do hope for is closing the financing gap that exists. This is something that was discussed in detail during Africa Climate Week in Gabon last month. How do we close the financing gap? And if COP27 does not adequately address this question, I'm not sure that we would be taking a step forward. I think that in order for us to take a step forward, we will have to find ways of overcoming this constraint in the financing gap that has been existing for some time now.
Yeah. Does that mean turning to fossil fuel exports?
Well, again, if we are to industrialize and if we are to undertake green industrialization, we will need the financing to undertake that that transition. Does it exist in adequate amounts at the moment? I don't think so. I don't think it does. And so we will remain in this condition that the world has been in, not only the African continent, but in this condition where fossil fuels continue to dominate. We have seen in some parts of Europe recently where there appears to be a reversal back to fossil fuels. So I don't mean to belabor the point. It will all depend on the financing gap that exists at the moment and the extent to which we're able to rapidly close that financing gap from what has been pledged to actually the amounts that are available on the table for adaptation.
So much for your time today and your insights. And thank you to our listeners. Please do check out the other podcasts on the African Climate Change Conversation platform, hosted on the British International Investment website, www.bii.co.uk.